Chapter 3. He was holding them up. His eyes blinked without looking at me. That and the moving of his lips was all he seemed able to manage in his overloaded state. And when I turned round, this head, that seemed more than human size resting on its chin under a multitude of other heads, asked me whether I really desired to quench the thirst of the captives. I said, yes, yes. Eagerly, and came up quite close to the window. I was like a child, and did not know what would happen. I was anxious to be comforted in my helplessness and remorse. Have you the authority, Senor Tenient, to release my wrists from their bonds? Gasparuza's head asked me. His features expressed no anxiety, no hope. His heavy eyelids blinked upon his eyes that looked past me straight into the courtyard. As if in an ugly dream, I spoke, stammering. What do you mean? And how can I reach the bonds on your wrists? I will try what I can do, he said. And then that large staring head moved at last, and all the wild faces piled up in that window disappeared, tumbling down. He had shaken his load off with one movement, so strong he was. And he had not only shaken it off, but he got free of the crush and vanished from my sight. For a moment there was no one at all to be seen at the window. He had swung about, butting and shouldering, clearing a space for himself in the only way he could do it with his hands tied behind his back. Finally, backing to the opening, he pushed out to me between the bars his wrists, lashed with many turns of rope. His hands, very swollen, with knotted veins, looked enormous and unwieldy. I saw his bent back. It was very broad. His voice was like the muttering of a bull. Cut, Senor Tenient. Cut. I drew my sword, my new unblunted sword, that had seen no service as yet, and severed the many turns of the hide rope. I did this without knowing the why and the wherefore of my action, but as it were compelled by my faith in that man. The sergeant made, as if to cry out, but astonishment deprived him of his voice, and he remained standing with his mouth open, as if overtaken by sudden imbecility. I sheathed my sword, and faced the soldiers. An air of awestruck expectation had replaced their usual listless apathy. I heard the voice of Gasparuz shouting inside, but the words I could not make out plainly. I suppose that to see him with his arms free augmented the influence of his strength. I mean by this, the spiritual influence that with ignorant people attaches to an exoptional degree of bodily vigor. In fact, he was no more to be feared than before, on account of the numbness of his arms and hands, which lasted for some time. The sergeant had recovered his power of speech. By all the saints! He cried, we shall have to get a cavalryman with a lasso to secure him again, if he is to be led to the place of execution. Nothing less than a good Lazador on a good horse can subdue him. Your worship was pleased to perform a very mad thing. I had nothing to say. I was surprised myself, and I felt a childish curiosity to see what would happen next. But the sergeant was thinking of the difficulty of controlling Gasparuz when the time for making an example would come. Or perhaps, the sergeant pursued, vexedly, we shall be obliged to shoot him down as he dashes out when the door is opened. He was going to give further vent to his anxieties as to the proper carrying out of the sentence, but he interrupted himself with a sudden exclamation, snatched a musket from a soldier, and stood watchful with his eyes fixed on the window. Gasparuz had clambered up on the sill, and sat down there with his feet against the thickness of the wall and his knees slightly bent. The window was not quite broad enough for the length of his legs. It appeared to my crestfallen perception that he meant to keep the window all to himself. He seemed to be taking up a comfortable position. Nobody inside dared to approach him now he could strike with his hands. Poor Dios! apostrophe, apostrophe, I heard the sergeant muttering at my elbow. I shall shoot him through the head now, and get rid of that trouble. He is a condemned man. Apostrophe, but that I looked at him angrily. The general has not confirmed the sentence. Apostrophe, I said, though I knew well in my heart that these were but vain words. The sentence required no confirmation. You have no right to shoot him, unless he tries to escape, apostrophe I added, firmly. But Sanger de Dios, apostrophe apostrophe the sergeant yelled out, bringing his musket up to the shoulder, he is escaping now. Look, apostrophe, but I, as if that Gaspar Ruse had cast a spell upon me, struck the musket upward, and the bullet flew over the roof somewhere. The sergeant dashed his arm to the ground and stared. He might have commanded the soldiers to fire, but he did not. And if he had, he would not have been obeyed, I think, just then. With his feet against the thickness of the wall, and his hairy hands grasping the iron bar, Gaspar sat still. It was an attitude. Nothing happened for a time. And suddenly it dawned upon us that he was straightening his bowed back and contracting his arms. His lips were twisted into a snarl. Next thing we perceived was that the bar of forged iron was being bent slowly by the mightiness of his pull. The sun was beating full upon his cramped, unquivering figure. A shower of sweat drops burst out of his forehead. Watching the bar grow crooked, I saw a little blood ooze from under his fingernails. Then he let go. For a moment he remained all huddled up, with a hanging head, looking drowsily into the upturned palms of his mighty hands. Indeed, he seemed to have dozed off. Suddenly he flung himself backwards on the sill, and setting the soles of his bare feet against the other middle bar, he bent that one too, but in the opposite direction from the first. Such was his strength, which in this case relieved my painful feelings. And the man seemed to have done nothing, except for the change of position in order to use his feet, which made us all start by its swiftness. My recollection is that of immobility. But he had bent the bars wide apart, and now he could get out if he liked, but he dropped his legs inwards, and looking over his shoulder beckoned to the soldiers. Hand up the water, apostrophe he said. I will give them all a drink. Apostrophe apostrophe, he was obeyed. For a moment I expected man and bucket to disappear, overwhelmed by the rush of eagerness. I thought they would pull him down with their teeth. There was a rush, but holding the bucket on his lap he repulsed the assault of those wretches by the mere swinging of his feet. They flew backwards at every kick, yelling with pain, and the soldiers laughed, gazing at the window. They all laughed, holding their sides, except the sergeant, who was gloomy and morose. He was afraid the prisoners would rise and break out, which would have been a bad example. But there was no fear of that, and I stood myself before the window with my drawn sword. When sufficiently tamed by the strength of Gaspar Ruse, they came up one by one, stretching their necks and presenting their lips to the edge of the bucket which the strong man tilted towards them from his knees with an extraordinary air of charity, gentleness, and compassion. That benevolent appearance was of course the effect of his care in not spilling the water, and of his attitude as he sat on the sill, for, if a man lingered with his lips glued to the rim of the bucket after Gaspar Ruse had said you have had enough, apostrophe there would be no tenderness or mercy in the shove of the foot which would send him groaning, and doubled up far into the interior of the prison, where he would knock down two or three others, before he fell himself. They came up to him again and again. It looked as if they meant to drink the well dry, before going to their death. But the soldiers were so amused by Gaspar Ruse's systematic proceedings, that they carried the water up to the window cheerfully. When the adjutant came out after his siesta there was some trouble over this affair, I can assure you. And the worst of it was that the general whom we expected never came to the castle that day. The guests of General Santiera unanimously expressed their regret that the man of such strength and patience had not been saved. He was not saved by my interference, said the general. The prisoners were led to execution half an hour before sunset. Gaspar Ruse, contrary to the sergeant's apprehensions, gave no trouble. There was no necessity to get a cavalryman with a lasso in order to subdue him, as if he were a wild bull of the campo. I believe he marched out with his arms free amongst the others who were bound. I did not see. I was not there. I had been put under arrest for interfering with the prisoner's guard. About dusk, sitting dismally in my quarters, I heard three volleys fired, and thought that I should never hear of Gasparuz again. He fell with the others. But we were to hear of him nevertheless, though the sergeant boasted that as he lay on his face expiring, or dead in the heap of the slain, he had slashed his neck with a sword. He had done this, he said, to make sure of ridding the world of a dangerous traitor. I confess to you, sinners, that I thought of that strong man with a sort of gratitude, and with some admiration. He had used his strength honorably. There dwelt, then, in his soul no fierceness corresponding to the vigor of his body. V. Gasparuz, who could with ease bend apart the heavy iron bars of the prison, was led out with others to summary execution. E. Every bullet has its billet, runs the proverb. All the merit of proverbs consists in the concise and picturesque expression. In the surprise of our minds, is found their persuasiveness. In other words, we are struck and convinced by the shock. What surprises us is the form, not the substance. Proverbs are our cheap art. As a general rule, they are not true, unless indeed they happen to be mere platitudes, as for instance the proverb, half a loaf is better than no bread, or this is as good as a mile. Some proverbs are simply imbecile, others are immoral. That one evolved out of the naive heart of the great Russian people, man discharges the piece, but God carries the bullet, is piously atrocious, and at bitter variance with the accepted conception of a compassionate God. It would indeed be an inconsistent accoupatian for the guardian of the poor, the innocent, and the helpless, to carry the bullet, for instance, into the heart of a father. Gasparuz was childless. He had no wife, he had never been in love. He had hardly ever spoken to a woman, beyond his mother and the ancient negress of the household, whose wrinkled skin was the color of cinders, and whose lean body was bent double from age. If some bullets from those muskets fired off at 15 paces were specifically destined for the heart of Gasparuz, they all missed their billet. One, however, carried away a small piece of his ear, and another a fragment of flesh from his shoulder. A red and unclouded sun setting into a purple ocean looked with a fiery stare upon the enormous wall of the Cordilleras, worthy witnesses of his glorious extinction. But it is inconceivable that it should have seen he and like men busy with their absurd and insignificant trials of killing and dying for reasons that, apart from being generally childish, were also imperfectly understood. It did light up, however, the backs of the firing party and the faces of the condemned men. Some of them had fallen on their knees, others remained standing, a few averted their heads from the leveled barrels of muskets. Gasparuz, upright, the burliest of them all, hung his big shock head. The low sun dazzled him a little, and he counted himself a dead man already. He fell at the first discharge. He fell because he thought he was a dead man. He struck the ground heavily. The jar of the fall surprised him. I am not dead apparently, he thought to himself, when he heard the execution platoon reloading its arms at the word of command. It was then that the hope of escape dawned upon him for the first time. He remained lying stretched out with rigid limbs under the weight of two bodies collapsed crosswise upon his back. By the time the soldiers had fired a third volley into the slightly stirring heaps of the slain, the sun had gone out of sight, and almost immediately with the darkening of the ocean dusk fell upon the coasts of the young republic. Above the gloom of the lowlands the snowy peaks of the Cordilleras remained luminous and crimson for a long time. The soldiers before marching back to the fort sat down to smoke. The sergeant with a naked sword in his hand strolled away by himself along the heap of the dead. he was a humane man, and watched for any stir or twitch of limb in the merciful idea of plunging the point of his blade into any body giving the slightest sign of life. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.